title of this thing? No title again?
And I did lonely be a little money.
Is it rolling, Bob?
Hey, what's up? Your DJ X is here. Glad to be with you. We're going to jump in today with a few songs that got kind of a party vibe. Primal Scream leading the way.
I don't know. Didn't like the first choice. This is Scissor Sisters, Take Your Mama. Take Your Mama. All right, I'm going to just have that in the background, if you don't mind. I just kind of leave it there. I took a chance. I gambled with what the DJ was going to come up with, and it wasn't for me. All right, hey, hang on. Yeah, this is the start of another Dixon James podcast. Oh, yeah. Number 900, and would it be 80 fucking 8? 980 fucking 8, I believe that is correct. Whoa, okay, well, this is going to be a short clip, an introduction only. I'm in the St. Andrew Cemetery, full of dead Scottish people, mainly. It's a nice church, and it's a lovely, quiet graveyard. And of course, I've mentioned this many times. If you're a regular listener, you know this place well. We've recorded from here countless times. It's the place where the McCowan remains are buried, with a big monument for them, ones who settled Scarborough. And that's why I said McCowan. No, Thompson. And that's why the park down below, you can see through the trees, is Thompson Park. So, yeah. That's because I have a few things to do. I had to do a lot of things today. I had to for a retired man, a lot of things. Go to the bank, get some cash, order from Niji to get the lunch special and pick it up by 3. Now I still have to go and do that. It's about 2:30 now. Get some groceries. We're out of bananas and some other basics. I got to do that. And what else did I have to do? I don't know. I'm not going to go to Vancouver. I don't know if I mentioned that last time. I had money left over on a WestJet ticket, $285, that I could use up until today, I think, to apply. But so then it was going to cost me, another $300 on top of that or whatever to get myself to Vancouver at a time when I really don't have to go. So it was better just to cut my losses. All right, so last year I had some health issues and I couldn't fly after I'd booked the cheapest ticket possible. And so I let those dollars expire, and that's fine. It wasn't the right thing to do. Doing the right thing isn't that a basic human question? What is the right thing to do? How often do we ask ourselves that? And it could be the smallest thing, you know. Apples or oranges, you know, what are you going to get? In the end, it's very often inconsequential, a decision you make, but sometimes they're actually very big decisions, like buy this house or not. In this case, there was a flight I had seen. It was only going to cost me another $200, but I thought, I'm not going to do that without talking it over with my wife first and letting my son know, do these dates work for you, and all the other stuff. And then it was better just to let it ride. So not going to Vancouver at this point in my life, when my wife needs a holiday far more than I do, that was the right call to make. Ordering Niji today, because my son is home. I didn't get in till sometime after 2 this morning. I know, because I was awake worrying about him. As a parent, Des, you know, it's unusual. This wasn't his normal pattern, especially on a working day. And when I woke at 2 and he still wasn't in, the front porch light was still on, and I was, oh my God, the TTC has stopped running. Why didn't I text him earlier and offer him a lift? And where is he anyway? I had no idea. And in your mind, it starts going to dark places. All the the bad possible things, and you run through these scenarios. You know, when the police ask you questions, where'd he go? Well, I don't know. Well, what was he wearing? Well, I don't know. Well, what friends does he hang out with? Well, I don't know. Well, where does he work? Well, I don't know. I laugh now. Oh, my God. There were a lot of I don't knows. I mean, I could find all that stuff out. My wife would know. But it just, you know, my, and of course, then you're not sleeping. You're tossing and turning and thinking, oh, my God. So finally, I got a 2 a.m. text, and I said, do you need a ride? No, it was an are you okay? God, I didn't want to tell this. I didn't want to share this. He wouldn't want me to share it. But I just felt, finally, you know, 2 in the morning, are you okay? Yeah, coming home soon. And that was it, you know. Okay, so, well, that ate up a little time. But, hey, I watched the Academy Awards last night. I always do enjoy them. And it's kind of, I listened to an NPR podcast about Emma Stone. And I have a little more respect for her as an actor after hearing, you know, what she did in the film. And now it's a film I need to see. I couldn't even tell you the name of it. The one where she dies from, I guess maybe it was called, it was not The Fall, or I don't know. Anyway, she died, and a strange surgeon brought her back to life, but she didn't know, she hadn't been taught what it was to be a lady. Okay, anyway, remove that. I overshared on Saturday. That's what I really, really want to talk about, but I don't know if I'm going to allow myself enough time. Oversharing. And it's the best word I can think of. And what happened? We had an absolutely wonderful gathering at the Only Cafe. Connie got there first. This is Connie Crosby, who, if you went to PodCamp Toronto, she was sitting right beside me at the bar. And we go way back as friends. And then John came, and then Lisa came, and then because I missed a few buses and had to get my way from Scarborough and walk from Pape, I was the last to arrive. But we got the table in the back, and then they turned dim the lights, and it got really dark. This is on the bar side where we like to be, and everybody watching for that prized front table. And sure enough, when it became empty, Connie raced up and nabbed it, and the four of us were sitting there. And it's right by the window, by the front door, close to the bar. It's just the perfect place, and it feels like, yeah, this is our bar. In fact, I even said, this is, you know, the Scarborough dude gets the head table. I did that, and that was after the toke, and that's what I'm getting to. So it was just really, really a nice place to sit. You've got the lighting is so interesting. I can get my way to the bar. It's very narrow, but I can get up there and order my beer and get back. And sometimes Max will carry it back for me to the table just out of niceness and so on. So we did what we always do. Okay, stop. Okay, that was my... I set a little alarm on my wrist. I love the fact I get a little vibration, a little tinkle sound, you know. You know, we're going to stop this music. We don't need music. I thought sometimes you get the perfect song and it's a really nice lead in. That didn't happen today, but it doesn't matter. This is, you know, these are the gambles, the chances you take, you know, when you're doing stuff that's supposed to be spontaneous, even though you've got a topic in your mind, my oversharing. So we have good conversations, and it could be about health. Connie's having surgery soon, and it's usually quite intimate in a good way. We're open. We trust each other. We have a lot about shyness, approaching strangers, and I talk about how much fun I'm having when I go for my walks and greeting people, and Lisa being kind of a shy person, and both John also being an introvert, talking about when he's in a big crowd of people, you know, 15 photographers in a gathering, it's just too much. It's overwhelming, and he has to either pass on it entirely or pull himself out or excuse himself from the loud talkers. And yet here they sit with me, who can be a loud talker and dominate a little bit, but they forgive me. And the problem is, here's the problem with my oversharing. I think very often, too often, I have wisdom to impart. Now, I've said it, That is maybe just as far as I get today. What happened? Well, we have these conversations. I decided, okay, now here I am. I'm 3 pints in. I had purposefully, I realized I'd run out of weed, and I went searching in the road trek, and sure enough, I found a little tiny little bag with just a little bit of grass, and looked like a piece of hash that had been covered in the grass, kind of very hard. And this was leftovers from when Bruce had visited, came for Christmas, visiting his brother. And he gave it to me. And there was enough to roll 2 joints. So I thought, good. So before going to the Only Cafe, I purposefully rolled 2 joints. Now I'm sitting in the Only Cafe. I made a point of not carrying a bag with me, but just getting a separate little Ziploc bag just for the lighters, little plastic container, and the 2 joints. So knowing I've got it, the other voice saying, well, Ken, you went to all that trouble. Now would be a good time to step out front and light up and leave them to talk. They'll be fine on their own. So they did. I did exactly that. And next thing, I'm up at the bar. Lisa's sort of looking because she's facing that way, and she sees me up at the bar ordering my beer, and she says, and then I look up, and the next thing, you're hugging somebody. And then I came back. Oh, yeah, I just get in this happy space. And I was hugging somebody who was a day worker at the Only Cafe, who I've probably seen before but didn't recall. But she was looking quite amazing. And the bartender, it was her birthday. And so everybody was playing it up and big news. Happy birthday, yeah. And the way this person looked, they had glasses on and they were wearing kind of a man's sort of sports coat hat. And when I get high, especially if it's a nice high, everybody's face seems so alive and so wonderful. And I realized it's a lot to do with youth. This is because maybe when I go to Birkdale Community Center, like I will tomorrow for my chair yoga, I'm looking at old faces and the life has gone. That brightness isn't there. And so I think I'm more attuned to that when I'm high. And then just being able to look and see these people in their youth, it just, wow. And, you know, my youth, I'm talking anywhere, you know, up to in their 40s. John doesn't quite make the youth cut. John's 62. She certainly did. And it just, you know, everybody, I was just raving about how much I love the Only Cafe. She thought, okay, anyway. Okay. So that's what happens to me. I get quite animated. Anyway, listen, now it's time for me to, I got to go get the, our Mackie trays, our bentos from the Niji. So I'm going to end it here. I'm going to get back to the topic of oversharing because after the talk, I overshare. I talk a lot, and I haven't even got to the part when. Here's the kicker. Michael showed up, Mustard Mike, and yeah, wow, I got a whole new audience here, and we ended the evening. He ended up driving me home. This was an unexpected bonus. Oh, my God, he's here to come for a beer. Are you guys still here? Yeah, yeah, we're here, you know. And he came in, and I just grilled him, like, okay, you know, are you an introvert? Where are you on that scale, the introvert, extrovert? And I just started throwing these questions because I got to get to the core. I got to get to the reality. We're going to have a conversation. We got to get a lot of shit. We got to get out of the way. And Lisa's saying, Ken, let the poor guy get a drink first. And she was so right. And I thanked her, and he went up and got a drink. Anyway, that sort of turned the evening around. And by then, we're down just to Lisa, and Lisa left, and it's down just to me and Mike. And next thing, he's driving me home, and I'm telling him how great he looks, and we got a whole new friendship that's just cooking. We got a friendship that's just cooking. Oh, yeah, we've made a really good start tonight. Lots of things happen, but I'm going to get back to that in the next clip, but I got to go get my get our dinners. Scarborough Dude signing out from, where is it? Which cemetery? St. Andrew's Cemetery. Bye for now.
You don't realize how much I need you. Love you all the time and never leave you. Please come on back to me. I'm lonely as can be. I need you. Said you had a thing or two to tell me. How was I to know you would upset me?
I was only going to have an introduction, just sort of, you know, to get the clip started and then fade it out. And as I listened, I couldn't find a place to stop in that song. It's so beautiful. That is the Webb Sisters covering George Harrison. And I'm pretty sure they were the beautiful ladies and acrobats, if I remember correctly, who backed up Leonard Cohen on his concerts. So I could be wrong, you know. Some people would know right off the bat, and others would not know what I was talking about and not care anyway. I Need You, it was called. And it made me raise the question, how much do I need you? You out there listening now, the listening audience. I was wanting to say, I don't need you. But would I continue doing this thing if I knew I had absolutely no listeners or... All right, no, I'll put it another way, because that's hard to imagine, but if it was just not possible to put out a podcast, like somehow there were just, it was banned, or you couldn't just release something the way podcasting is so easy, just record and put it out there. If that was not possible, would I continue to be doing this? And the answer, of course, is no, I wouldn't. You know, so listeners must play a part of it, knowing it's going out there. Now... To me, it could almost just as easily be listeners in the future. That's something I count on, is the future, even more than the present. But, you know, that's kind of foolish, except that, you know, I'm always have this faint hope that people of the future will dig, and they'll find, they'll unearth something. And it could be an old Dixon Jane zine of the 20 years of the zine, or, you know... One of these podcasts. If I know, that's interesting. And maybe dig a little more and find a little more. But anyway, let's get back to here and now. I'm sitting at Thompson Park It is Wednesday, March the 13th. It's not quite 1 p.m. in the afternoon. I came across a quote that I'm going to share to you, and it's probably gone now, damn it. Oh, yeah. I should have saved it. It didn't matter. It was Aldous Huxley somewhere saying, nobody cares. People are happy to be ruled. They don't want responsibility. They don't want to be bothered. As long as they can still get on with their, you know, silly little pleasures. Basically, that's what he was saying. That's all they want, you know. And that's probably, sadly, probably true. But what his exact words were, those are lost. Even then, as I kept digging, and that's not important. Because what's important is what I have to say. Oh, yeah. And that was sort of meant to be funny, but it's not really, because that's what the Dixon James podcast is about. Ken blabs on. I try, I really do try, to offer things that I think would be of interest. And I'm going to get back to the topic of oversharing. And, of course, big picture, this whole podcast is oversharing. That's what I'm doing. Like, hey, nobody asked for all that shit. An hour a week? Hey, who's got that time? And why do you have to tell almost everything? Like, who cares what day, what time, what place you're at? Well, I do. It's the here and now. So what is it we want to share? Okay, first of all, I'm going to start off with an apology. Let's get this out of the way. I too often just slip into the habit of seeing my wife when I mean Naoko. And it when I hear back later, it's just, ooh, it sounds wrong. Like, what, possession? Like, hey, I thought you were all about support for women, and that's, I've been much more conscious of that recently. I suppose, particularly after finishing this book, Rebel, that I talked about last time, I don't know what to think of that person themselves, but I think it's not important. The story of the treatment of women in Saudi Arabia and other predominantly Islamic countries is disgusting. It's just awful, and it's simply wrong. And there's no, oh, well, this is, your culture says that, but in other cultures they have different norms and things, and you're not in any position to criticize. Fuck you, I am. Anybody that has power over women to control every aspect of their life through physical force, through draconian laws, through anything else, you're fucked up. You're stupid and fucked up. Okay, I know, Ken. It doesn't help by yelling into the mic. But it really does bother me. And you know, that book is out there. If anybody wants to read it, Rebel, I have a copy I'd happily share. I did want to say something about the person who co-wrote it, because I know this 18-year-old, or 18 when she escaped to Saudi Arabia and made the news stories around the world, which is what saved her from death or imprisonment or, you know, a terrible, horrible life, was the co-writer, somebody called Sally Armstrong. And boy, she's quite somebody. 1998, she was made a member of the Order of Canada. In 2002, she was awarded an honorary doctorate from McGill. 2000, she won the Amnesty International Media Award for her article Honors Victims in the Chatelaine Magazine. She won again in 2002 for Speaking Their Peace, Chatelaine Magazine again. 2011, her article These Little Girls Are Setting Out to Change the World. She provided critical support, the founding of charity Books with Wings. It's a member of the UN group consisting of 20 Palestinian women, 20 Israeli women, and 12 women of other nationalities working doing peace in the Middle East. 96, she was awarded the Women of Distinction Award by the YWCA. She was invited speaker in 2019 to CBC's Massey Lectures for a series entitled Power Shift, The Longest Revolution, in which she said that improving the status of women was crucial to our collective surviving and thriving, and how much I agree with her and applaud. So I just thought that was important to share with you. She was the co-writer for this book, Rebel. I think I'm going to leave that. I am looking through notes. Gosh, I've got so much. All right, let's just jump back in to a movie I just watched, finished watching it this morning, called American Fiction. And my God, I watched Poor Things, which, I've watched, I guess, maybe some of the top five, six pictures for the Oscars this year. Poor Things being the most bizarre, but here we go. I think there was a message throughout that movie, and you know, I'm not very good at this kind of thing, and other people might fault me, and I don't care, because I don't think the people who fault me are really the people who would listen, but I really believe the message was, there was a scene in the end where she's told by her husband, the main character, if you leave, I will kill you. I will simply put a bullet in the back of your head. You cannot leave until I say you're ready to leave. And it was just this power of the husband over the wife. And this was exactly what's going on in when I read Rebel about where the husband, who's just taken on his third wife, the way women are treated in Saudi Arabia. And of course they say, oh yeah, but now there's, you know, things are lightening up a little bit and they're changing the laws and now some women can drive. Yeah, parts of Saudi Arabia, that may be true, but it's certainly not the case that there's been any major changes. Men are still completely in control and can beat women and so on. But in this movie, it seemed to me as if Hollywood, or wherever this movie came from, was putting out the message, hey, wake up. There's a huge part of the world that's under the rule of Islam. And this is how they treat women. And that just ain't right. And that's got to be changed. That's got to be stopped. That cannot be spread any further. And enlightenment has to come. And I guess that's what Sally Armstrong was on about. And that's certainly my feeling after seeing the movie Poor Things, with one of the messages being, amongst many others, the horror of men having complete control. He even threatened he was going to cut off her clitoris so she wouldn't have any pleasure in sex. It would only be for his to meet his needs. And believe you me, we know about that in some people who practice that still today on young girls. I don't want to get into all of this. It's just wrong. I don't know. And now I'm questioning, why am I saying this? Like, who is listening and what difference is this making? It's just maybe me needing to vent. Maybe to tell myself so that I know more clearly what I believe. Maybe that's the purpose of me holding a mic in my hand and talking out loud instead of being sitting in the sunshine. What else have we got here? When we feed and support our own happiness, we are nourishing our ability to love. That's just another way of saying the same thing I keep coming back to. If you can't love yourself, you can't love others. And I still maintain that is just so damn hard to do. It was even a theme that came up in American Fiction. Okay, so I jumped around. I just said I just finished watching it. That is a picture worth watching. It was an excellent movie. Really, I just can't say. I mean, I want you to discover it for yourself. I'm not going to tell you anything about it, especially the ending. American Fiction. And I'm glad to see it did win, I guess, Best Adaptation of Screenplay. I think that was the award it got. And as Brian Hassett mentioned, there was a very good speech, acceptance speech for that award, saying instead of making these huge blockbuster movies, you know, at $100 million. Why not make 100 movies at $1 million, you know, and basically along that line, and give other people a chance. And boy, oh boy, what a great message that is. Okay. Loblaws, they are now trying a new system where if you use self-checkout, you have to tap your receipt against a machine before you can exit the store. And this would be, they would take that receipt of what's on it, and it would give a list, I guess, to a computer, scanning immediately, and maybe somehow scan that against what's really in the bags you're walking through that door with. Because they say they used organized crime. Well, organized crime isn't robbing from Loblaws to that degree. A lot of poor people might be trying to beat the system, and hey, it serves you right if you're, you know, laid off cashiers and brought in self-checkout. But that's disgusting, and that's going to backfire and blow up in their faces. It's only been temporarily tried, but what a horrid thing. Okay, we'll let you check yourself out, but we're going to double check because, you know, there's a very good chance we're going to catch thieves. So there goes trust. And, of course, I hate it. And every time I go to Shoppers Drug Mart and there's one cashier and a lineup and then all these empty self-checkout machines, which invariably are a pain in the ass to use. Okay. Alligator Liberty. Alligator Liberty. Well, what the hell is that? Alligator Liberty. I just found that out today. I don't think I ever knew that before. I don't know if I even read that before. That's the name of a ship. A transport ship that sailed from Yokohama to Vancouver in 1994. I think the sailing date was scheduled to be May 22nd, 1994. And you might think, oh, is this some kind of important story? Did it sink and all lives were lost somewhere in the Pacific? No, it was carrying all our personal household belongings from Japan when we moved to Canada. And it's just in part of my cleanup, part of my going through files, I found one that was labeled the address of our house, and in it was all the documentation that my company paid. When I opened the branch in Canada, my company in Japan, I got them to pay for transport of all our, you know, two containers full of belongings. I mean, they weren't the full-size cargo containers that would fit three cars, but they were containers that were shipped from Japan, from, you know, picked up, delivered, put on, and it went through the number of companies it went through to get to our front where they dropped the containers in our front, our yard, when we moved back to Canada in 1994. We bought the house. I purchased it actually in October 1993 while we were still living in Japan, and finally took possession of it in May 1994. So this is a 30-year anniversary for us. So that's kind of a big deal. This was just while I was cleaning out files and finding papers and thinking, do I keep this? And all those papers I've kept. And I'm just going to leave it to my sons to say, well, we can just junk this. But it is the history of our coming back to Japan. They were already born then. And this is when we started our new life in Scarborough, where both my sons grew up. So it was kind of neat to find all that paperwork, including the name of the ship they traveled on. Means nothing to you, I know. But to me, yeah, okay, I wanted to know. I didn't know the dates. All right, 30 years, yeah. And I guess here is my point. I read a lot. There was a lot. I had to line up a mortgage while I was living in Japan with the Royal Bank. I had to convince, we had the head office downtown, right opposite Union Station, that Royal Bank, the big gold building where I walk in and say, hey, I'm being transferred from Japan. I'm opening a branch office in Toronto. I need a mortgage and I need some financing and so on. And I can't believe reading through all these folders how businesslike I was. I mean, this doesn't sound like the Scarborough dude. This was Ken. This was Ken that had been shaped up by living in Japan. That company smartened me up, taught me responsibility, put me into a suit and tie, working 5-6 days a week, and just brought about such a huge change in my life from being, you know, this drunken Nigeria, basically, you know, that was fun. And that was a big growing up learning experience. How, wow, just to adapt to life in a different country. But Japan was the thing that really made me take responsibility, where I met my wife, got married, had our children born. And then when I did realized it was time for a change to move back, did everything necessary to get ourselves back to Canada, not scrambling to look for a job, but to create a job. And a company, Kairinsha Canada, bankrolled by the president's personal authority of the head company back in Japan, back in Yokohama. And wow, that was really quite something. And here we are today, me sitting in a car, broken down car, my wife's old Mazda, or Toyota. All right, so I guess, but that's a bit of a wander. Was there anything else that I needed to share with you? I didn't really get into the oversharing, except that this whole podcast is oversharing. So I was a bit scattered, but this is a day that is so beautiful and warm. It's just incredible. It was, what, 13, 14? I don't know. I've probably got an app that would tell me the temperature on another clock face, but I'm here. I'm going to go out, take a little walk, get my exercise here at Bluffers Park because I wanted to be by the water. I feel a little bit in celebration of looking back 30 years and realizing I did all I needed to do to provide for my family and make a new start in a new world in Canada and with the help of a lot of people. Nalco being amongst them, and certainly the backing of the president of my company in Japan. And, yeah, I feel good about that. So I'm going to leave it there. I know there's a whole lot more to say. I will come back to you and see if I can pull this together a little better and finish off what I mean by oversharing. And is it wrong to overshare? Maybe that's the question. Scarborough Dude signing out on this gorgeous spring-like day. Bye for now.
Moving on, I got a mix of stuff that should sound a lot like what you've been listening to. Something just your vibe. Starting off with this one from Charlie Parker Quartet.
Now's the time. And that is, turns out to be perfect, whether you're enjoying it or not. It's now the background, but the title, Now's the Time. Because this is exactly the theme I'm wanting to get into. I don't know what my sound levels are like here, and normally I wouldn't care, but it's hard to think and talk and listen all at the same time. So I'm going to give up two of those. I'm not going to listen, and I'm not going to think. I'm just going to talk, and that's something you're probably quite familiar with by now. Oversharing. That was at the beginning of the week. It was really important to me. After Saturday night, I felt I had overshared by telling Michael basically my story after Lisa had left. But he did ask, and it was necessary, well, to answer his question. You know, I think it was an almost a how did you get to where you are now kind of question. I think. Now, remember, I was high, and but the evening ended on such a nice note in the parking lot when he dropped me off at my very car. And so I know I hadn't done any harm, you know, and here I am sounding defensive, like, oh my God, Ken, well, what did you say? Well, no, I told him I kind of thought I was a wimpy kid in high school. I had friends, but I wasn't a brain, I wasn't a jock. I was funny, I was a class clown, But still, I needed to prove something to myself. I, you know, I was felt I was a crybaby, and I wasn't crying all the time, you know, but I wasn't strong. I didn't have confidence. And that prompted that first trip to Europe in 1961. Now, by then, I'm 21, but I did go off on my own, and it really did make a huge difference. And then there was more. And so here I am giving you the background, but you've already, some regular listeners have already heard some of this. But I reached a point in my life when, whoa, it was time for some psychiatric help, thanks to a helpful girlfriend. Kind of a meltdown. By then, I guess I'm 24, 25... about that, 24. And got the help I needed through group therapy and realized, okay, here's the key, here's the kicker, realized we're all fragile. And again, I've talked about that before, so if you're a new listener, welcome, good, now you know. But that was a turning point. It's not just me. Like, it's you know, we're all just struggling to do our best to get through life, to come to terms with who we are. In relation to all the other people around us, you know, some good people, some assholes. And so if you're lucky, you've got a circle of friends and they really help you a whole lot. And I had that, a lot of friends. Alcohol and dope did a lot to cement the friendships, but I knew how to make friends before then. Those things just happen to be part of the chemistry that really bonded a bunch of us. I've mentioned that before. Anyway, and then I guess a turning point for me was finally realizing, you know, getting that I've got to do something with my life. I've got to, you know, I was changing jobs continually, moving, hadn't been focused on anything. I couldn't, and it's clear from this podcast, I do have something like ADD. I get deeply into something, and then bam, I exhaust it. I burn it out completely, and then wow, okay, where am I going to get my next rush? Luckily for me, I'm not an alcoholic and not a drug addict, but I do like to get off, you know, on thrills, and not crazy jumping out of an airplane thrill, just enthusiasm, turned on to something interesting. Anyway, I did buy that one-way ticket to, it was a one-way ticket to Paris in 69, and then a one-way ticket to Japan in 1984. That many years later, that's interesting, I hadn't thought of that. Only 15 years later? Soon 15 years later. And then that changed everything. So anyway, I guess I answered his question. And pretty well insisted we be friends from this point on, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, it's a good thing. And I'm oversharing. Hey, why are you even telling anybody that? You know, so what? Oh, you made a new friend? Oh, good for you. That's all. But now, is this podcast oversharing? Is it the words? Here's a thing. When I was a little boy, and I'm guessing 5 or 6, I remember asking my mother. I don't know how I phrased it, but I was a little concerned about using up all my words. I guess maybe it was quite remarkable. I was learning new words. I remember I was watching. I was quite young because I was watching my brother and sister go off to school. But this idea that as you use the words, they were spent. And you just, you might use them all up now and you're done. There's no more of them. They're gone. Now, this didn't keep me awake at night, So I'm not telling you something shocking. I just remember that peculiar concept. But it means even early on, I was a wordy person. I was about words. And that's why the journals, the written journals, when I was in my 20s wanting to be an artist, a writer, always the pen and the scraps of paper and the notebooks. I've got a briefcase full of old notebooks, which I should haul out and read a few from sometime. Yeah, that'd be an idea. That'd spice it up, make it more interesting, maybe. Maybe not. Probably not. but that's what I did, you know? And now this, you know, Crazy Dixon Jane's podcast, which is sort of telling me, yeah, man, you got to stop at 1,000. Just don't make it a big deal, but just give yourself and your listeners a break and move on to something else. And so I do have a plan for that. All right. So, personal journey. Do not confuse knowing about yourself with knowing yourself. Okay, so we're kind of moving on to a new topic here. I picked up a book at the Birkdale Community Center. Boy, oh boy, has that ever been a gift that keeps on giving. I finished the book called Rebel, about, and I've already given my opinion about Saudi way of treating women. This is by Eckhart Tolle, A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. And, I mean, I don't like the title, but boy, there's a lot of good stuff. This guy clearly has got awareness. And I'll use the quotation marks, because usually the Anthony Markles and the Dave Brodbecks, oh, for anybody in our Discord group, quotation mark awareness is a joke. Like, yeah, okay. But I'm... That's tempting to use it as a title, but it is about awareness, and there are some wonderful quotes, and that is kind of what I want to talk about. Here's a piece from it. The snow falls, each flake in its appropriate place. Yeah, you know, yeah, somebody is saying, yeah. A little Zen quote, you know, the snow falls, each flake in its appropriate place. But the meaning is pretty damn simple and clear. The snow is falling according to the laws of gravity, and it's doing what it's supposed to be doing, and if a little gust of wind came by, it would change where that particular flake fell. But everything is doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing, according to change, according to life, according to the movement, according to, well, you know, you could say the laws of gravity, but so much more, all the other factors. There's nothing wrong about what happens, and it's an acceptance of the living moment. The living moment. The snow falls. It's present tense. It's falling. The snow falls. Each flake in its appropriate place, just where it's almost destined to go by whatever the fraction of a nanosecond before dictates. I'll just leave that there. Thank you very much. Here we go. The decision to make the present moment into your friend is the end of ego. Because there's a lot of this about how do you really find yourself. I mean, that was one of the themes, right? Finding who you truly are. Well, you got an ego, and that ego is sort of the roadblock. The ego is the thing that gets in the way and keeps you from your essence. And it is those rare times, I find them sometimes when I'm camping, I have those moments when I have awoken to the now. I mean, I've experienced, I know it's true. That's why, you know, when I say awareness, I'm saying, yeah, but I believe it. It's true. It's real. You can awaken to the present. I'm sort of now, although words are just tumbling out of my mouth, I am in the moment. The words, I don't know what word is coming next. I don't know what sentence is coming next. I don't know where I'm going to get to. I don't know what I'm going to say. It doesn't matter. It's just what's happening right now, and including the impact of that little sax going on in my ear, throwing me off course. It's all this present, flowing, ever-changing, never permanent, nothing you can hold on to, moment. And so where were we? We were at the ego and losing yourself, because the ego wants to construct, wants to build. And I think that was part of the oversharing part I was trying to build. This is who I am. I'm the man who's been to, lived in Japan. I'm the man who did this. I'm the man who did this. But that's not who you are, because you are, I mean, it is a part of your personal history. But you are in that moment, and I know it does. Okay, I'm gonna stop here. I'm gonna stop here because there's another little voice in the head saying, "Ken, you knew before you started talking you were not gonna get any of this right. You knew that. You knew you were gonna be in trouble. You had a topic. You wanted to stick to it. You wanted to follow through. What does it mean to overshare? And you knew when you started making notes like this." For example, life is always now. You never experience time itself. You only experience the present moment, or rather what happens in it. Now is all there ever is. I left off the is part. I knew these quotes. And this, me picking up this book and saying, whoa, we got something here. This looks interesting. Was going to distract me, throw me off. The other thing that I'm trying to do is actually share with you, to reveal myself, to be true, to share something that might hopefully have just a little bit of value. And as I put all this stuff up, I just get further and further away from doing that. Here's something I wrote yesterday but didn't share it, and I'm sharing it now. If I'm totally content, why do I need to share it? Like, if I'm really as happy as I felt yesterday, and yesterday I didn't share, but boy, oh boy, did I ever feel good yesterday. Yesterday was just a day when, wow, the music was perfect, the weather was perfect, and I was just being, going through Bluffers Park and existing in the now, feeling the sunshine, feeling the breeze, sitting by the water, feeling absolutely blessed, wonderful. And I didn't need to tell you that, and yet here I am today saying, hey, guess what? Yesterday I felt really good. So you can see I'm struggling. When you become aligned with the whole, you become a conscious part of the interactiveness of the whole and its purpose. The emergence of consciousness into this world. As a result, spontaneous, helpful occurrences, chance, encounters, coincidences, and synchronistic events happen much more frequently. So, that is when you're open to things. Now, I'm tying back to oversharing, because oversharing is something I tell people. I think I was born lucky. And when I say that, I always feel bad afterwards. Because, you know, somebody say, well, if you're really lucky, would you need that walker? If you're really lucky, would you be running up debts on your line of credit? If you're really lucky, you know, this, and this. And it's a crazy explanation. It's a belief that I have luck. It's a belief that things will always go my way, no matter how. And that can sound like is that selfish? Does it mean if things go my way, then it doesn't go somebody else's way, that I'm lucky and you're not? Is it one of these, you know, negative type things? And I don't mean it to be. It's just, it was the only explanation I could find to explain how fortunate, how blessed I feel grateful. I feel happy. And I experience those moments. I told you, when I get in my road trek and I'm driving down the highway and suddenly I go, yes, yes, really loudly. I held the mic away for that, by the way. I'm in that moment. I'm exactly where I am supposed to be in the now, enjoying the bliss of that move down the highway, knowing I'm going to a camp and I'm going to have a wonderful time getting high and sitting and looking at the trees in a comfortable chair. But it's... It's what? Ken, stop for a minute. Just stop. Just shut the fuck up for a minute. I don't know if maybe I should just stop here now, try to finish it off later, or go back to my notes, which says, your inner purpose is to awaken. It is as simple as that. You share that purpose with every other person on the planet, because it is the purpose of humanity. The inner purpose is an essential part of the purpose of the whole, the universe, and its emerging intelligence. Now that, I believe, that this awakening that we might try to feel in our lifetime, this literally opening our eyes, but experiencing being alive in this second, is what the universe is trying to do. There is a universal awareness, awakening, intelligence. And somehow we have to, we are at one with that? Do we latch on to that? Do we join that? Does it come to us? Do we go to it? But somehow, this matter, the planets, the stars, the physical makeup, the chemicals, everything else, is in parallel or is connected to, is part of intelligence. Awareness is arising from that. From matter comes awareness. And what's so weird is maybe almost going, well, a bit of a circle here into a dark place, that time when my girlfriend said, you need help, was when that switchblade I was holding in my knife that I still have was matter and my inner self and soul and mind and heart was the other, the counterpart. And if I brought them together as one, there was a uniting. And that's insane. That's dangerous. That's, you want to stop thinking like that. Don't do bad acid anymore. Leave chemicals for a while. Go get some help. Whew. So this is a bit of a mess. And I can either let it go and put it out as is, or say, Ken, back to the drawing board. And then the other voice says, well, fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. It is what it is. It is what it is. It is what it is. That's what happens when you just turn your mouth loose. What do you have to prove? What do you have to give anybody? What do you have to, what do you care? What is it you're trying to really do? Whose approval do you need? I don't need any fucking approval. Thank you very much. Fuck you. Ooh, a little bit of anger there, Ken. Where's that coming from? A little bit of inadequacy still hanging about? No, just a little pushback. Against myself, for questioning myself, for not just fucking chilling, man, and sitting back, enjoy the music. Come on, man. There's something else you could do besides talking, you know. Whoa. You seen the movie Chucky? Have I got a wooden dummy on my lap that's talking for me? Uh-oh, hey, why don't you get here? I said get out. I don't want you anymore. Whoa. All right. No, look. Okay. No, sorry. I'm fine. Thank you very much. We're going to bring this to an end. I think we're done. I did want to end on a note that is sad because, meanwhile, I have a friend whose wife is dying of cancer. And it's a terrible, horrible, awful thing, and it's just part of this thing called life that takes from us. And this friend is losing something, the most precious thing he has in his life, which is his partner. And it seems very cruel and very unfair. And I don't know what else to say about that. I'm just sorry, and I just wish it didn't have to be. And that they could go on drinking beer together and laughing and traveling and having fun and loving each other and loving their pets, and life would be as it was before, but it's not going to be. Because of this horrible monster called cancer. Thank you.